tweet at TodaySOR.
Now, just looking at the pictures from the Pro Cathedral in Dublin, the President Michael Dee has arrived at the Pro Cathedral along with his wife Sabina, and they are being welcomed by the Archbishop of Dublin, Dr. Diarmaid Martin. We'll just get a quick update in a while from Evelyn on that. Meanwhile, I've got some sensational news to report concerning the Kevin Lunny investigation. RTÉ News, and Paul Reynolds has filed this copy. RTÉ News has learned that the main suspect in the investigation into the abduction of Kevin Lunny has died. The man, who is in his 50s, took ill when Derbyshire police searched his home in the UK this morning. Gardaí and the PSNI believe that he was the main organiser behind the kidnapping and extremely violent attack on the Quinn Industrial Holdings executive. The man has been a target of the police on both sides of the border for years and has already got over 50 previous convictions. Now, it is time for our Friday gathering. The panel is with me in studio, but first, I listen back to the big stories of the week.
And it is with great sadness for this station, for this organisation, for this nation, but above all for his loving family, that I have to announce the passing of Gayborn.
This was a murder of the most serious, disturbing and shocking type, the judge said, because of the extreme violence, the ages of the boys, the swiftness with which Anna's life was taken, the planning and calculated ease with which the crimes were committed.
For our part, we can only say that forever is not long enough.
On the main road, I was able to see the light of a house, and I said, I have to try and get to that. I pushed myself along. I remember stopping a few times because I just couldn't go any further, and I remember thinking about the kids, Brona, everything. I was thinking, I don't think I'll make this, but I did keep going, and I kept pushing.
70 males was coming in first, then it was 38 males, and then it was 13 vulnerable women. But it doesn't matter who was coming in. The situation is, I didn't know anything about it. If I'm going to defend something and I have to go and talk to people, I need to know what's happening.
It's a very challenging time for the media industry. It's a challenging time for RTÉ. Let's be candid here. The ways and means of how people are watching and listening to media has changed fundamentally. We have to change with it.
Oh, I have regrets about missing things that I should have done insofar as ideas for programmes, and sometimes I regret being a bit careless about what I was doing, and generally speaking making an awful lot of mistakes. But all you can hope for in television and radio is a reasonable batting average, and I think the batting average was reasonably high.
The much-loved, much-lamented Gay Byrne there, his voice now stilled, and his funeral about to take place in the Pro Cathedral in Dublin. That compilation put together by Niamh Lyons. With me in studio, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil TD for Dublin Fingal, Peter Burke, Fine Gael TD for Longford West Meath, Lise Hand, journalist and commentator, and Mary Minahan, assistant news editor with the Irish Times. So many powerful stories of the past week, but I suppose the sentencing of those two youngsters for the murder of Anna Creagel, Lise Hand, there's no upside to it, is there?
There really isn't, Sean. I actually attended a few days of that trial, and I was there when the verdicts were handed down. And I think, you know, when for every journalist, even hardened ones who are sort of used to sitting in the dock, it was very hard to process what, you know, the evidence we were hearing and the incredibly young age of the two boys sitting in the dock. I think it was very difficult. And there is no consolation really to be taken out of this, because if you look back to, you know, other high profile trials, we say something like the Belfast rape trial, right, which sparked a debate about consent and about social media and the use of social media. This is so strange and so dark that there's nothing, we don't know why they did it. Mm-hmm. We know the how, a lot of the how came out in the trial, but the why has never been answered. And I think this is the thing that people are trying to come to terms with, why they did it, what motivated it, and there's no lessons to be learned from this just because it is so, it's so dark.
Yes. What do you think, Mary Minahan, again, it's just one of those things that the judge had to balance punishment with the possibility, the prospect of rehabilitation. He did accept that there is the chance that they may change, but it's going to take an awful lot of treatment and work with these two young men.
Yes, I think as Lise said, we don't know the why of it. You know, as journalists, we're always interested in the who, the what, the where and the when, but we don't know the why yet anyway. And I think what was so striking is, you know, the youth of these boys, and we heard about one of them asking for Lego during questioning by Gardaí, another one being very interested in building models and drawings. So it's just so shocking and so dark. And I think the pressure on Oberstown, where the boys will be going, is going to be extraordinary, just because we're in such a new scenario. We haven't encountered anything of this darkness to date.
Yeah, Peter Burke, a lot of evidence that certainly boy A had been exposed to very powerful, nasty games, a lot of pornography, that sort of thing. So is that something that needs to be looked at?
Definitely, there is no doubt, and I think there's a huge amount of work going on in that area now. Obviously, when one heard the victim impact statement from the parents, it was hugely devastating, and it's one of those such a sensitive trial, and even the judge had a very difficult case to adjudicate on in terms of sentencing. But I think in terms of the issues, there's a lot of work going on in government to try and modernise our laws, which is underway. We've signed up to the Istanbul Convention, and also in terms of the No Excuse campaign, which is going for 3 years now, to try and assist and make awareness. But there's a lot of work to be done.
And in the schools as well, and Absolutely. In families, I mean, there needs to be an awareness and action. But nobody seems to know what is the action to be taken about helping kids insulate themselves from the worst of this.
I know. And you see, kids are so impressionable, too. And that's the thing. And everything, like I've a daughter, she's 11. A lot of her friends now already have mobile phones, and there is a pressure there, and there's a security reason that parents will have. Both folks are working and whatever. And it's a tough call. Like, I've resisted that call with great difficulty with Keelan, you know, that she's not getting the phone until she gets to secondary school. But when you do that, you see the Pandora's box is opened, and like you can't close it again, but it's how you manage it. I think there's another element to it as well. And this is awful, the Anna Creasel case, and like her folks and her family, and you just can't imagine what.
And clearly just, a delightful young woman.
It's yeah, absolutely. It's and seems so bright and so full of life and fun and everything. And it's just, it's absolutely devastating. But I think the one element we do, Peter's mentioned in relation to digital controls, yes. Also, the CAM service, Child and Adult Mental Health Services, there is a big issue there. And I'm not tying one to the other, but there was another terrible attack there that you would have seen, where that lady was her throat was slit there. Another, again, under 18s, that was quite the under 18.
Dunleary, young Chinese man.
Yeah, and his family had mentioned the fact of their inability to be able to get him the psychological care and mental care that he needed. I come across that pretty much every day of the week in my own area of, you know, with young people who are troubled, wanting to access mental health services, needing that help and that assistance and not being able to access it. So there are things that we can do to make it more accessible and easier for kids to get the help that they need.
Yes, but in this case, everything seemed normal on
absolutely.
The surface. Normal families.
I'm not equating one to the other. I agree.
Another story that's been dominated. We heard that comment from Michael Ring there, the Minister for Rural Affairs, Mary Minahan, about the need for a national conversation or debate about how direct provision is arranged. But what did you make of the Taoiseach singling out people from Albania and Georgia as responsible for an awful lot of the extra flow?
Yes, that caused quite a kerfuffle, as you can imagine. And then he made a subsequent intervention when he talked about direct provision being imperfect but not inhumane. And we've had direct provision for 20 years now. And I suppose the key thing to remember is that these are people coming into our state seeking international protection. And you had the Justice Minister, Charlie Flanagan, on your own programme yesterday saying that Michael Ring was right when he complained that he had been kept in the loop about what is going on or what might be going on in his own constituency. So I think, like so much in life, communication is key, and people need to be kept in the loop about what might be happening or might not be happening. Flanagan's argument, of course, is that the department can't go public about these things when until plans are finalised, but this is Ireland and things leak out.
What's wrong with the Taoiseach telling it as he sees it?
Well, you know, he has a reputation for this. I mean, he, you know, his own Twitter bio used to say, you know, get in trouble for opening my mouth and put my foot in. You know, this is something he trades on. And he's one of those cases, he's damned if he does and damned if he didn't. You know, some people would say you shouldn't have specified, you know, two nationalities. And others said, well, you know, we do need to have this. And just to go back to the point about the national conversation, though, I think that this possibly should think about possibly putting the whole area of sort of direct provision and welcoming refugees maybe into a proper citizens' assembly, because it's the obvious safe space, I think, to have that sort of conversation. I mean, they've two planned and they're on stuff that actually really could be legislated on. I think it's gender equality or, you know, they're not necessarily things that would set up a full assembly. But if you think about the thing that the two citizens' assemblies on before the two referendums on marriage, on equal marriage equality and on abortion, they got people into the rooms to share their experiences and to tell their sides of the story in a neutral place. And this, because it's such a divisive subject, given, look, we've seen all the protests everywhere, this could be something they could look
you
at.
You don't agree, Darragh?
I understand what Lisa's saying. I don't agree completely, respectfully. I'd say, well, firstly, what for the Taoiseach to single out two nationalities is wrong. To single out and to say it in such a manner was bordering on Trump-esque. It was irresponsible. And I think he knows it, and it's actually dangerous to do that, particularly in the climate where we've seen with direct provision centres four now, for various different reasons, where people have come out and protest, and okay, whether there seem to be in some instances some genuine local concerns and consultation needs to be improved, absolutely agree with that. But in all instances, those small group of people have effectively got their way. So we have four centres now, and I know in Ballinamore that I know well of that particular centre, which is a very high quality accommodation that's there as well. A lot of work had gone into it. You saw what happened to my colleague Martin Kenny. Everyone condemned that absolutely. Well, you don't want a situation where people feel they win on this. Now, on direct provision, yes, it does need to change, and Lisa's right on this and about the conversation. But if you look at, there's nearly 1,000 people currently in direct provision that their status has been awarded for permanent residency, but they're still in direct provision centres. We have
passed, because they can't get housing.
Yeah, you see, yeah. And so there is a thing there, but we should not let a small bunch of right-wing people win on this. And I don't think Leo's comments were irresponsible, and they were dangerous.
They played into those prejudices.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with calling out illegal migration. I think, to be very clear on that, you know, there's a huge difference between economic migration and someone who's coming from a war-torn area, whose life is under threat, whose family has been abused. And we have to be open
Northern
as a country
Georgia,
who have benefited
South
from
Ossetia,
that through the years. Sorry. You
know, I'm just saying that there was
okay,
a war
just,
torn country,
just hold off there. Yeah,
you, sure. I didn't interrupt you.
No, no, fair enough.
I think, to be fair, I think we have to support people in that case. And obviously, there's been a huge problem with communication in some areas, but it's a very fine area to balance, because if you have a commercial transaction going on in terms of a tender and you go to a community and say, look, we're going to bring in 30 families here, well, then the person that's obviously agreeing with the government to go through that tender process is going to up the price, or it's going to be sensitive commercially. So it's very difficult to get that balance right. But I do think we can improve it. We have 39 centres now in terms of around the country. We need to bring the adjudication time down, because ideally 9 months was the specified time. It's been over that, but the government
but the
are working hard to bring
it
down.
Won. They've won
no,
in Ackle,
they haven't,
they have won in Uachtaráin.
If you look at Kinvara, in the last few weeks, a number of families have gone down there. Barras Ocáin has now improved. There's huge areas of improvement. We've heard a few where there's been concerns, but we have
like
to work.
Ruski and
yeah,
Movel.
And we have to work on those. We have to work on those communities. And the far right voices that have been given oxygen in some places have really brought out the worst in some communities.
The point
when
was
they were led with misinformation.
Not to interrupt, Peter. The point I was just going to make: if you look at Georgia, which is a country that it seeks to accede to the European Union and has strong ties here with the European Union, has been and continues to be a war-torn country with a frozen conflict that's there with Russia. And it's a reality for people. So I don't think anyone will agree that you should single out two specific nationalities to blame them for
illegal migration is
well,
wrong.
You
that's the issue
but,
we're talking
like,
about.
Like, you're targeting basically Georgians and Albanians to saying that they're the lion's share of what's a perceived problem. That's
well,
not
I think
right.
The was very clear. He's clarifying it was illegal migration.
You know it's not right.
Lise Hand, RT, as well as reporting the news, has been in the news for the last 48 hours. Cutbacks on the way, 200 reduction in headcount, the Limerick studios closing, other measures as well. How do you think, what is your assessment as somebody who keeps an eye on, I suppose, what broadcasters are doing and also what politicians keep doing? There just seems to be a total standoff between this organisation and government.
Yeah, there's a bit of a circular firing squad going on at the moment, I think. You know, the members of the government are taking pot shots at RTE, and RTE are saying, well, you know, we need more money. I heard a very excitable Patrick O'Donovan on Drive Time yesterday being quite agitated about this. But I think,
He's the junior minister of finance.
Excuse me, the junior minister for finance.
And
yes.
The Limerick TD.
And yes, and he was very exercised about the Limerick studio. Yeah, you know, I think there's the way to look at this. Politicians have a fairly beady-eyed view of RTE. I think a lot of politicians, there wouldn't be a huge amount of sympathy among them out here, because a lot of them have come in, even to this studio on occasion, Sean, and, you know, taken a few
all
licks.
Smiles.
All smiles and purely professional. But, you know, there doesn't seem to be, talking to a few politicians, a great mood of sympathy among them for the plight that RTE finds itself in. And coming from a print background, I have great sympathy for what's going on out here at the moment. I mean, I worked in the Sunday Tribune, where the bailiffs were expected every day. I worked in the Irish Independent, which went through a few absolutely savage cutbacks and redundancies. And of course, I most recently worked at the Times Ireland, which closed its doors. And I really see what happened to the print industry several years ago, I think, is now happening in broadcasting, where the effects of online and people consuming things online, it's just taken longer to get to broadcasting. And I think RTE, I mean, I'm not sort of telling them what to do, but there's a difference. I think the whole notion of public broadcasting isn't sold enough. I think people, you know, it's easy to say we're the public broadcaster, but it's explaining how the sausage is made and, you know, how important it is. And I think, you know, it's a big ship to move, and it moves slowly. But, you know, I really think that... You know,
no, I agree. I mean, the future of public broadcasting is at stake. And I think Indigenous content is so important. Like, as someone who grew up in Northern Ireland and absorbed so much of, you know, British content, because, well, we always thought the British Army were scrambling RTE's signal, but there might have been a more innocent kind of topographical explanation for it. But you do... I think it's very important that you, you know, hear people who speak like you, who share your culture, and get that reflected back to you by your media. If it disappeared, people would be very, very sad about it. But, you know, the Irish Times took no pleasure in breaking that story the other day, and like RTE, like lots of companies, expanded in the good times. And, you know, the really tricky part is being flexible enough to retract in the bad times.
Peter Burke, the line from government ministers is that, you know, RTE needs to look at itself, it needs to make changes. Well, that's what the RTE authority has gone about doing, but the government seems happy to just sit back and let it watch it stew in its own juices, so to speak, and do nothing about the brokenness of the licence collection system, and indeed the licence itself, for 5 years.
Well, I think the Taoiseach said very clearly they will take action once this restructuring is stress tested in terms of the report that's presented to government, and to ensure that it does stack up. Because one thing you want to avoid is that if RTE is getting extra money, and in 5 years' time, if its listenership and viewership has reduced again, well, then we're back in a worse position. If you look in 2013, 2014...
There are no guarantees about the future, you know that.
But in 2013 and 2014, RTE was able to break even. Yet at that stage, and if you look at now, its commercial revenue was around the same, the licence fee is the same, but its operating costs increased by 11%. So I think we need to take a hard look at why that was happening. And it's very important.
Partly it's a migration of commercial revenue over to the social media.
But commercial revenue was 150 million odd in 2013 and 2018, yet it was able to break even. So we have to answer that question.
I just also think that as a profession, media organisations aren't very good at lobbying either. I think there could be much more cross platform. You know,
Derry,
unity
on this. You come from a constituency previously represented by one Raphael Patrick Burke,
yes.
The former
when I was in school,
who knew all about how to give this place a right good kicking.
Well, I think, look, I'd speak for myself and for my own party, and what I'd say is that, yeah, look, of course there are changes that are needed within RTE. I take no pleasure in it. I'm not one of the politicians that Lisa has referred to. I believe in public service broadcasting. I think when you look at what Mary has a point, as and Lisa's a point, is that what that brings to the rest of independent production, filmmaking, you know, documentaries, TG Car, all of those things. But what we need to do is to tackle the issue of evasion. Most people are compliant in this country, but the tens of millions of euro that have been lost to the Exchequer, but also lost to RTE by poor collection rates, lower than the European average. And the idea that Richard Bruton would kick this down the road for 5 years is not something that I think is acceptable. We need to address it. Of course, restructuring needs to happen. The first people you think about are those people who, like, I've lost my job before. You know, it's not nice. It's not a nice position for people to be in coming up to Christmas. 200 people that have been, you know, slated for that redundancies. Hopefully they can be managed through voluntary redundancies. But it isn't nice. But we've got to get it right. Government and whatever future government needs to support and say, is public service broadcasting important? If it is, we need to support it. That doesn't just mean supporting RTE or you or this show. It supports all those independent filmmakers and documentary makers that are all around the country. And what we have is a very, you know, a very vibrant sector there, but has been very badly underfunded because of, particularly because of evasion rates, you know, and that's a big issue.
Yes. And again, a sad irony, this is happening at a time when we're literally within minutes of the funeral mass starting for our much lamented former colleague Gay Byrne, the outstanding broadcaster in this on this island, head and shoulders above anyone else. And let's go back to Evelyn O'Rourke, who is at the Pro Cathedral. Evelyn, bring us up to date. Who's been arriving and what's happening?
Well, Sean, in the last few minutes, President Michael T. Higgins has made his way here, as has the Taoiseach. Other familiar faces filing in past me include people like Joe Duffy, Dennis O'Brien, Ryan Tuberty, Harry Crosby. Director General Dee Forbes is here. And I just spotted former President Mary McAleese making her way in there as well. So at this point, the church, I gather, is closed to the public, as in the public area is now full. There is a lovely crowd outside, Sean, gathering in this beautiful autumnal sunshine this morning, or winter sunshine, I should say. So there will be a lovely welcome when the cortege makes its way here, and we're expecting it any minute now.
And you've got a copy, I gather, of the Mass booklet. So what can you tell us about the choice of readings and who's going to speak there?
I have indeed. And the idea, Sean, is that this has been published online and they are inviting people to kind of download it and have a look at it and follow it throughout the ceremony as they watch it on RTE. So what I can tell you, Sean, is that it looks like Gay Byrne's daughter, Susie, is going to do the welcome after the entrance. So that could be really interesting to hear what she has to say. Then also, as we know, the chief celebrant is Father Leonard Maloney. He will be saying, he'll be giving the sermon. And then Bob Collins, former Director General, will be giving what's described as an appreciation near the end. So I think there'll be three key points that people will be really interested in watching out for. In terms of the readers, Sean, Mary-Louise O'Donnell is a reader and Moya Doherty is a reader. And then also the offertory and those jobs are being covered, I imagine, ably by his grandchildren. So it's a real family affair, I have to say. Earlier we heard from Father McDermott saying they wanted it to be, the family wanted to be kind of a simple celebration, and certainly flicking through and seeing what the plan is for the Mass, it sounds like it'll be really personal, really moving, and just a very fitting tribute to this great man.
Evelyn, thanks indeed for that. Back to studio here. Mary, you were talking about the difficulties in following RTE when you were in Derry because
yes,
the signal was weak. Well, what did Gay Byrne mean to you?
Well, that's it. Funny because my introduction to Gay Byrne was when he popped up on Channel 4. Now, it wasn't a public service broadcaster, but it did do a public service. I presume that was it was a truncated version of The Late Late Show that was aimed at emigrants in London and Birmingham and so on. And the whole thing, the set, looked like someone had put a horrible 1980s carpet up behind him. The way he dressed, the deceptively relaxed way which he sat with his elbow on the desk. It was like absolutely nothing you saw on British TV. And you know, it has been said he himself was a relatively conservative man, and he somehow managed to very gently nudge Ireland out of a 1950s mindset,
Peter Burke,
didn't
he? Yeah, he was an incredible, iconic broadcaster. From my early memories would be the Taoiseach, obviously, was number one on the list. And then after that, I thought that amazing interview with Pádraig Flynn where Pat Cox was on the phone with laryngitis, and, you know, it was like in your own sitting room. It was surreal in terms of how it was conducted and how he was responding back. That was an incredible interview. It was one of the ones that stood out for me. I was only maybe 15 or 16 at the time.
Yeah, I suppose it was one of those ones where the most important thing Gay Byrne did was to keep his mouth shut and just let him keep talking. Dara?
He was an absolute giant. Like, and I think we all know that, like, Peter's kind of mentioned it, obviously he would pick out the Pádraig Flynn interview. But
I
think, look, for him and his family, but he had such an effect in Irish broadcasting, but in Irish society. And when I watched The Late Late Show earlier on, the special earlier on this week, I kind of was bring back childhood memories for me One of the most powerful shows I saw was the OMA, the show a few weeks after OMA, which was replayed. So he'll be sorely missed, and there'll never be anyone like him again.
Yeah, I think probably the most eloquent speaking of him since he's died are just the ordinary people that we heard on the streets outside. Evelyn O'Rourke was talking to earlier on. And I think one of the biggest services he did was he made the Housewives of Ireland feel part of a national conversation. Mm-hmm. They weren't voices that were often heard, and he spoke to them. And I think that's the biggest legacy he leaves.
Yes, we got a text, which I think in error, that took off the screen, but from memory it said, look, my mother in the 80s, she died alone in the house. I was the one who came along to discover her, but in fact I discovered that the radio was on beside the bed, and I knew she had died between 10 and 11, so she was listening to Gabo, so she didn't die alone, was how that listener and said, may he rest in peace. And in fact, as we say our goodbye today to our old friend Gay, we can hear now a short poem specially commissioned to mark the end of the Gay Byrne Show on RT Radio 1 way back in 1998. The poem was written by Brendan Kennelly and is aptly entitled The First.
You were the first to let the people speak their minds. You listened to what each one had to say in your patient, tolerant, critical way, responding when they raised inquiring hands to speak of pain or fun, of loss or gain. You encouraged Ireland to open up, to face the ghosts of darkness, let them rip, express the secret heart in sun and ice and rain. You were a one-man university where all were welcome without paying a fee. You gave us words, ideas, music, song. Often you made us laugh out loud and long. Beneath it all, you searched for what is true. Thank you for that. But thank you most of all for being you.
He put it so well. Brendan Kennelly paying tribute there to Gay Byrne. Gay, as we know, stickler for punctuality. I think that Cortege may just be a minute or two late. It's just been passing through O'Connell Street, but due any moment now at the Pro Cathedral. May that fine man rest in peace. That's our lot for today and for this week.